Bickley and Murata, live at Cardinals HQ. This is Cardinals All Access at the OTAs, presented by Courtesy Chevrolet, your exclusive home for Arizona Cardinals football. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
We kick off hour number four, day two of OTAs out here at the Dignity Health Arizona Cardinals Training Center. Now, DJ Humphrey set a high bar today. And the man who's tasked with following him, in DJ's own words, on his way out of the studio, Jordan Hicks joins us now. Jordan, good to meet you, man. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
DJ's kind of a goof.
To say the least, huh?
Well, you were one of the early big splash acquisitions for this team. How's your acclimation been? Yeah, you happy with Arizona so far?
Man, it has been unbelievable. The people are awesome. The city's awesome. Obviously, the team is awesome. We're diving in head first, and there's a lot of energy out there at practice, and it's exciting where we're going.
Outside of being a player, had you spent any time in Arizona before getting here?
You know, I haven't. I had some family out here. Only time I was ever out here was a quick little weekend trip to Tucson, actually. There was a little retreat we went to. But outside of that, that's kind of what I thought Arizona was. And quickly learn different. You know, this area is unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm sure people have told you that the weather that you're experiencing during week one of OTAs is not typical for this time of the year.
Yeah, I've heard. I actually, I'm from Texas, Claim, Texas, and did 2-a-days and everything in there in that heat. So, you know, I would like to say it's probably comparable to that, but everybody's telling me it's different.
Yeah, I don't know if the weather anywhere in this country is typical right now, if you know what I'm saying.
Weird stuff going on.
Yeah, Jordan, you last 4 years, you've had two incredible years, a couple of injury-marred years, if you will. It's led to that narrative that when you're on the field, you're really, really good and really, really productive as a playmaker. Can you stay healthy? What do you think of that whole storyline?
Yeah, you know, it is what it is, you know, and I don't think about it. I don't give it any mind. In my head, every injury is my last injury. And, you know, I'm going to bounce back just like I did every other time. And so that's always my mindset going through that process. And so, you know, for me, it's a matter of just playing well, keeping my body right, being a pro. You know, it's a part of being a pro is, mm-hmm. is taking care of your body every time. And there's a lot of resources out here in Arizona that I'm getting together and, you know, expecting a full healthy season.
Jordan Hicks, linebacker for the Cardinals, our guest. Want to remind you that Arizona Cardinals season tickets are on sale right now. The 2019 home schedules includes visits by the Steelers, Browns, Panthers, Lions, and Falcons, as well as the Seahawks, Rams, and 49ers. For tickets, call 602-379-0102 or visit azcardinals.com/tickets. You're new here. Your coordinator, Vance Joseph, is new here. Early impressions of what he's installing defensively.
Yeah, I love our scheme, man. It's very multiple, a lot of different looks, but simple also. Mm-hmm. You know, the ability to play fast is key in this game. And so when you keep things simple, get everybody on the same page, and you can all play fast, that's when plays are made.
And your whole deal is to generate pressure.
Yeah.
Because as you know, and I've heard you quoted on this before, creating pressure that creates mistakes very often that can be better than a sack sometimes.
Right, and if you can get pressure with five people, if you can get pressure with four people, however you get it, mm-hmm. pressure on a quarterback makes mistakes, and you know that leads to sacks, fumbles, interceptions, bad throws. You know, second and longs. That's what you're aiming for. You're aiming to win first and second down and force those turnovers.
Okay, now it's really early, but as a guy who has been in the league a while now and has got some experience on him, were you skeptical of a 5'10" quarterback, and have you been impressed with what you've seen?
No, not skeptical at all. I've seen it all. Okay, especially coming from the Big 12, knowing that type of offense, understanding, you know, the type of quarterback that is necessary for that type of offense. Not skeptical, not one bit. And then, yeah, absolutely, I've been impressed. He's out here taking control, and throwing some good passes. You know, you know about his legs, you know about his athleticism, mm-hmm. but he's out there throwing dimes, so it's good to see.
Now, you played your college ball in Texas.
Yeah.
I don't have much experience being in Texas, but the legend of Kyler Murray, can you just kind of paint the picture of how big high school football is in Texas and what it means to the people there?
Yeah, so I didn't play high school football
there. Yeah, because you played in Ohio, right?
Ohio,
yeah,
Cincinnati.
It's big there, too.
It is very big there. But moving there, all I ever heard about was Texas football, mm-hmm. you know, and all it kind of made me aggravated, you know, because I'm from Cincinnati. Like, you guys are over here claiming Texas is the best football, but I'm here, you know, I'm clearly from Cincinnati, coming from there, and you guys are disrespecting me, you know? And so, but at the same time, it's like a religion, you know what I mean? And you hear that, you see that on all the movies, and you know, they try to play it like it is, but it's when you see it, those big 5-6A schools and the way that the towns rally around it, it's unbelievable.
Now some of those stadiums too.
Yeah, it's
like
nuts.
$60 million stadiums.
Yeah, nicer than some colleges.
Yeah. Nuts.
Okay, what's it like to, and we talked a little bit about this off the air, Philly's a very interesting place. They revere a guy who's a movie character. They built a statue of a guy who's a movie character. They eat Scrapple, right?
Scrapple.
Scrapple. Yes. Which is basically the leftovers of hot dog meat, right? The stuff that like real dogs wouldn't even touch, right? What was the experience like?
You know, it actually, the things that you just described are the reasons you come to love that city. You know, it really is. My experience was awesome. It was a huge adjustment my first year. I was alone, you know, in a brand new city with a bunch of aggressive people, to say the least. And, you know, you got to learn how to drive there differently. You got to learn how to talk and walk through lines and walk through the city. Yeah. It's everything's different. And coming from Austin, Texas, where everything's slow, it's a lot different.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but as you learn and you know, enjoy the city, you know, you enjoy it and you come to love it. And, you know, I had a great time there. Really appreciative of all the experiences I had.
I'm assuming that being part of the Eagles' first Super Bowl championship team, I mean, you're in that small group of revered players for the rest of your life. I mean, you ever go back to Philadelphia, Jordan, I don't think you're going to have to buy a beer, is
Man,
what I'm saying.
It's pretty cool. That whole experience was unbelievable. Just the way the team was and the way the season played out, it was awesome.
Here's what I really want to know. How is the sports talk radio in Philly?
Man.
Oh, my guy, Anthony Gargano, all these guys. Come
we
on, man.
Yeah, we weren't talking about this type of stuff. We were talking about quarterback and injuries and all these crazy things going on.
I just started thinking, I was almost going to like lob him a question in the voice of a Philly sports guy, and I thought better of it.
Not
even pull it out.
It's a hard accent to do if you're not from there.
That's
right, because it's not
tough.
New York. It's not a New York accent, you know? But I was thinking of Travis Kelce, right?
Yeah.
During that whole parade.
Jason Kelce.
Jason Kelce. Yes.
Jason. Epic.
Just insane with that city. It was like a forever triumph, right? So be part of that. Bring the first Super Bowl trophy to Arizona, and now you'll like really accomplish something.
Absolutely.
Awesome, right?
Absolutely. That's the goal. That's what I'm here for.
Jordan Hicks, linebacker for the Arizona Cardinals, our guest here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. One of the big storylines, and you're familiar with it, and we've talked about it, and the fans are talking about it, Patrick Peterson, suspension, and I heard some of the comments from some of the players yesterday, support, obviously, but what's your thoughts on what's going on there?
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, you just support him, ready to get him back, excited to get him back, and, you know, for me, I haven't personally played with him. I'm excited to play with him. I can't wait for that moment. So.
Yeah. All right, let me ask you about this. Because you have a fresh set of eyes, and this is largely a remade team with a lot of new faces, what does your instinct tell you about the chemistry here and the talent here? What do you feel about what we have here?
Yeah, I think it's building.
Okay.
You know, I think we're in a phase right now where everybody's getting to know each other. Everybody's gelling, you know, but you see leaders, you know, starting to emerge and guys really, you know, taking their role on. And that's what you have to have in these type of teams. Guys have to be together. All the good teams I've been on, it's been like a family, and that's what you're building right now.
Last question I want to ask you. This kind of goes back to something you said earlier that I thought was pretty profound, and that is the idea of just being a professional in football, which encompasses a lot of things, and staying in your playbook, taking care of your body, all that. A lot of guys struggle with that. There are guys who play football because they can, because they're big enough, but don't love it. There's people who are insanely in love with the sport, and I'm not sure if that's all that healthy. I think there's a balance there of taking what the game gives you and giving back what you need to. What does it mean to be a pro, and how do you see that spectrum of athletes in the NFL?
Yeah, well, in my opinion, the best pros, you know, older vets that I've seen have always found a way to create a chip on their shoulder, always feel like they haven't made it. right? Because the moment you feel like you've made it, you relax and everything's mm-hmm. easy and, you know, I got this. That's not it. You know, when you feel like you continuously have to prove yourself, your game, and continually improve, that's when you take care of your body. That's when you study harder. That's when you, you know, take the extra time to make sure you're making those plays on the field. So the best ones I've seen find a way to create that chip. And it's different for all of them. It's different for all of them. But, you know, whatever makes you tick, that's what you hit. That's what you go for.
That's really interesting to me, too, because it's sort of basically the key to everything, especially in this league mm-hmm. where, you know, it hurts a lot to play football. Yeah. You know what I mean? And everybody wants to get to that point where you're like, all right, I'm good. I've arrived. I can slow down now a little bit. But that's death.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, not only that, but conversely, the guys that maybe do feel, oh, I'm in the NFL now, I made it, they don't take it all that seriously. This league weeds you out faster than it ever has
so
before.
Quick. Yeah. So quick. I mean,
sure
you see
you've
it
seen
all
that too.
Yeah, you see it all the time. Guys come in with all these expectations, and before you know it, they're out the league.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Just like that.
Yeah.
And then they wonder what in the heck hit them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sad. You see that a lot too.
All right, have you eaten Scrapple?
No, I never did. I never did. I was close one time, but no.
Good choice.
From Wawa.
You're professional.
Your opinion of cheesesteaks.
You know, I think there's a couple good places. I like Tony Luke's.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I felt like Tony Luke's was the best.
Yeah.
Yeah,
kind of overrated. I know where you're going with that.
That's kind of where I was going.
Who puts Cheese Whiz on perfectly good steak? I'm so with you on that, dude.
Put the provolone on it.
Right, exactly.
Jordan, thanks for coming
in, man.
Thank you,
brother.
Great
meeting you, babe.
Yeah, you too.
Can't wait to see you play. Jordan Hicks, linebacker for the Arizona Cardinals, our guest here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Chop the beat, the beat, the beat.
All right, one of the stories I found earlier in the day that I wanted to bring up to Vinny, it has to do with Major League Baseball, and it doesn't have to do with the Diamondbacks and how they're doing or any of that. It speaks to the viability of baseball and the entertainment quotient in baseball. And clearly this is one of my favorite subjects because I think Major League Baseball has got some serious issues to address. There was a piece today in the Washington Post that made the claim that velocity is strangling Major League Baseball. The amount of high leverage fastballs above 96, 97 miles per hour has changed the game so dramatically that it's turned into a very boring affair. Now, let me throw some stuff at you from this.
You know what's funny real quick?
Because
I have the article in front of me. The first picture in this article is Jordan Hicks, not of the Arizona Cardinals, but of the St. Louis Cardinals.
St. Louis Cardinals.
He's kind of the
How
poster
funny.
Boy of this whole thinking because he throws so extremely hard.
How funny that is.
Yeah.
All right, the 2018 season last year was the first season in Major League Baseball history in which strikeouts outpaced hits, a trend that has accelerated so far this year. So the ball is in play less than ever before with a record 35.4% of plate appearances this year resulting in a strikeout, a walk, or a home run. Teams are using an average of 3.3 relievers per game, just below last year's all-time record. The league-wide batting average of .245 in 2019 is the lowest since 1972 and a drop of 26 points from 1999. The league-wide strikeout rate of 8.78 per nine innings, also a record, is higher than the career rate of Roger Clemens. Now, here's the really good stuff. As if those stats weren't mind-blowing enough in and of themselves. In the year 2008, 10-plus years ago, there were 196 pitches thrown at 100 miles per hour or higher. 196. In 2018, 10 years later, 1,320 pitches thrown over 100 miles an hour.
I remember being a kid, and I'm dating myself here when I say this, but Nolan Ryan hit triple digits on the jugs gun, and you're like, oh my goodness, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And now it's Aroldis Chapman does that every pitch. Jordan Hicks does it every pitch. The number of pitchers that can hit it. This was the thing that stood out most to me in this article, Bick, because you hear it, and I think people just say it, and it doesn't hold as much validity as you think. oh, it doesn't matter if you throw 110, a major league hitter is going to catch up to that kind of fastball. The stats, via StatCast in this article, the slash lines, which is batting average, on-base percentage, and slugging percentage of major league hitters in 2018 against four different pitch speeds. At 92 miles an hour, opponents hit 283, 364 on-base percentage, 475 slugging percentage. Pretty good. You'd take those numbers.
Oh, yeah, sure.
As you increase by 3 miles per hour, it dips pretty substantially at 95. It dips again at 98. By the time you get to 101, which it's a big sample, as you said, mm-hmm. over 1,300 pitches thrown at that speed, batters hit 198, on-base percentage of 257, and slug 214.
Wow.
So there is something to this, and there's not a lot anymore to the, oh, they'll catch up to any fastball.
No. What one of the thesis of these of this piece happens to be, and you just pointed it out, when you get up above 95, it's in a graduating scale here where the closer you get to 100, the lower that batting average comes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the Paul Goldschmidt problem, in my opinion. So you look at this, and the thesis says major league hitters now, to catch up to these high-range fastballs, you got to gear up. I mean, really gear up. So now it's just becoming a matter. You're swinging for the fences, and if you connect, it's gone, and if you don't, you're striking out. And that's basically what Major League Baseball has become. And that is just, and I don't know what the way out of it is, because they have now recruited and made this such an important aspect of Major League Baseball. The piece will tell you that in the second half of the 2020 minor league season in the Atlantic League, I want to say, they're going to move the mound back 2 feet.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
How do you do that?
You've been playing. That'd be like raising the hoop in basketball by 2 feet.
Exactly.
You have to completely change the game.
No, you can't do that.
You've conditioned your whole life to throw the ball 60 feet, 6 inches. Now you're going to throw it 62 feet and 6 inches?
Nah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Every pitch just lands 2 feet below the plate, before the plate in the dirt.
And after two innings, we've scrapped this experiment.
That's right.
It's called because we have to move the mound again.
But the fact that they're even trying it, Vinny, kind of reaffirms just how serious this stuff is.
No, but it all comes full circle, and it comes back to attendance and popularity of the sport. And I'll say this. I think there's a lot of really solid data that would indicate, okay, this, you know, the higher velocities and the prevalence of those pitchers that can hit those speeds now is making a harder offensive challenge for hitters. Okay, I get it. But as a fan, if you're sitting there flipping through the channels and you got two baseball games to pick from and you're going to watch one of them, are you going to watch one where Jordan Hicks comes in for the Cardinals and he's throwing 105?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you, you know, more fascinated by watching a Greg Maddux or a Zach Greinke hit the corners? I can appreciate both. But the fascination is with the higher speeds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, again, I've seen what an 88-mile-an-hour fastball looks like from home plate.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine what a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. It must be terrifying. That's why you look at Major League Baseball. People who don't know the game have no idea how physical and how dangerous this game is. It will chew you up, top to bottom, because the grind, the day after, the courage it takes now to face some of these pitchers who throw that fast. I'm not kidding. Mm. It used to be you just be afraid of Randy Johnson. Remember that famous John Crockett bat in the All-Star game? Still one of the funnier things ever. And that was probably for a fastball at 98, 99.
True. I mean, Randy Johnson, hard thrower, but wasn't really known for hitting triple digits.
No.
And he's been retired for 10 years, too.
But you're right. There was back in the day, if you got triple digits on the radar gun, it was like, it was like a 4-minute mile. And now it's everywhere.
And now a 4-minute mile is not that much either. Can I come back to something that you just sort of passed over? That there are two professional athletes named Jordan Hicks who play different sports, both for the Cardinals.
Isn't that weird? I know.
You didn't say it right.
It's very weird. It's, hi, everybody. So weird.
Yeah,
I got another Jordan Hicks.
We didn't plan that out, and I had looked at a lot of the article, and I didn't even realize that, but going from Jordan Hicks to Jordan Hicks.
I was going to say, I'm pretty impressed. I knew Jordan Hicks was good at getting after the quarterback. I didn't know he could hump it up there at 105.
The Phoenix Convention Center will once again host more than 75 of the Southwest's best craft brewers with over 350 craft beers, and we're giving you the chance to win tickets. Just visit the rewards page at arizonasports.com to enter, and for complete details on the Real Wild and Woody Indoor Beer Festival coming on July 27th. Coming up, he was introduced today. He joined us right after. We'll replay our interview with new Suns head coach Monty Williams next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Giving you exclusive coverage of the Arizona Cardinals organized team activities, the OTAs. Bickley and Murata. Live from Cardinals HQ, presented by Courtesy Chevrolet, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Earlier today, the Phoenix Suns introduced their newest head coach, Monty Williams, at a press conference at Talking Stick Resort Arena. Right after the press conference, Monty Williams joined us here on Bickley and Murata. We're going to replay that interview right now for you. Monty, I'm Vince. My partner is Dan. Congratulations and welcome to the Valley.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me, and thank you for having me on your show. It's an honor to not just coach the Suns, but be a part of this community, so thanks.
Yeah, you covered a lot of territory in your press conference, but in this process, with the Suns identifying you as their next head coach, you obviously were coveted. Your name showed up on a couple of different lists. For you personally in this process, what were the boxes you wanted checked from your next employer, and how did the Suns fit that?
Well, I think anybody's looking for alignment and talent. And that's two things that we have here. James, myself, Mr. Sarver, Jeff Bauer, Trevor, we're all aligned in our views, values, what we think will lead to success. And then the talent base, however young, it's a talent base for a young team that you can't look around the league and say they're any teams that are that much better than Devin and DeAndre to start. And McHale, who's a guy that I thought we had in Philadelphia until draft night, we made a trade in Philly. And so it's a joy for me to be able to connect with him. But those two things, the alignment and the talent base for me, and then the city. I felt like the city was going to be a good fit for my family. I have a lot of children, and the kind of city that I raised my kids in was always going to be a big part of my decision.
Monty, you said a lot of great things at the press conference today, and I think you've got some young kids on your hands that if they get a taste of stability finally, which they've never had here in Phoenix, they could really take off. I want to get your thoughts on that in regards to you and how you view yourself in terms of being a servant leader, number one, and the idea that you have a calling to complete in your professional life.
Well, my servant leadership is based on my faith as a Christian. Jesus Christ is the number one leader, the only superstar for me in my life. And I try to, as best I can, however badly, imitate his servant leadership. And don't always do it well, but that's my goal. As far as a calling is concerned, I just had a level of peace and felt called to come here and be a part of this. Now, it's an MBA job, and I'm paid a lot of money. And so those things are a part of it. But when I prayed about it and got wisdom from a number of people that have always told me the truth, it helped me to make an informed decision to come to Phoenix.
Monty Williams, the new head coach of the Phoenix Suns, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. In this process for the Suns, Monty, we talked a lot on this show and other shows, and my partner mentioned it, instability. But we also talked about the topic of experience. You obviously have vast experience in a lot of different areas of basketball, playing the game, college and pros, coaching it as an assistant and a head coach, front office experience. But focusing on the NBA playing experience, as a head coach, do you find it to be beneficial to have that experience to connect a little bit more with your players?
I do. I think it's, knowing how players feel gives me some foresight when I design practices or talking to them about their bodies or decision making when it comes to, you know, how we're going to play, where they're going to live, all those things. Now, with that being said, that's not the only way. I've had great coaches in my history who didn't play in the NBA. And so I think both avenues, if you will, can lead to success. But for me, being able to relate to players, because I've done it, I know what it's like to play with broken fingers. I know what it's like to play with a torn meniscus. And I know what it's like to be on a one-year contract. My last 4 or 5 years in the league, I was on a one-year contract every year. And so I know what that's like. I know what it's like to be a first-round draft pick. And I know what it's like to take big shots and all that stuff. And I know what it's like to be cut. You know, I have a number of things that have happened to me in my career, and if I would have been better in a certain situation, I might not have gotten cut. So I think the transparency and the timing of when you convey those messages to young players can help them, and that's my goal. I want to help. I don't want to dictate. I want to be able to help our young men become the best versions of themselves on and off the floor.
Monty, you're a real smart guy. You've been in the league a while. You've got real experience. You're really tight with Alvin Gentry, who's seen the best and the worst of Robert Sarver. And I know that you feel really good about where this is right now. This, to me and to a lot of Suns fans, this alignment is the source of the greatest optimism yet. Can you be candid with our listeners and just and give some insight on why you think the owner is completely committed to doing the right thing in terms of organizational hierarchy, and tell us about that little interface you had with them in Philadelphia when some hard truths were told both ways?
Well, I mean, if you look at the commitment that he's made to me and my family, that's a huge commitment in this day and age. There's coaches around the league that have done more than I have who haven't gotten that commitment. And so for Mr. Sarver to commit to me and my family with the years and finances says a lot about what he wants to do as it relates to the conversations that we had. We just talked and we were both transparent about who we are as people, some of the mistakes that we made. And for me, the ownership that he displayed, not one time did he throw anybody under the bus. Not one time did he make one excuse. And I just found that refreshing in this day and age where people are on social media just ripping each other up and making excuses. And, you know, you can do two things. You can make excuses or you can make progress, but you can't do both. And for me, that was huge, just being able to talk. And we both had things that we had to admit. And, you know, I have this reputation that's way overblown, just boring. That's just the reality. I don't have much going on other than basketball, church, my family. That's it. And so I've gotten a reputation that just is kind of weird. At the same time, you know, I look at Mr. Sarver and I felt it. He wants to bring this city success. And the craziest, you know, most fans would be kind of weirded out a little bit just based on the history, but Mr. Colangelo was the guy that really pushed me to work for Mr. Sarver. And that said a lot, because most people would think that they don't get along, and that's contrary to what the reality is. And so all of that stuff, along with our conversations and us being transparent about the things we want to be better at, helped me in this decision.
That's really great. Your life was changed tragically after a basketball game in Phoenix, and the NBA community grieved with you. You've got a great support system of your children, and people are familiar with your story. It's heartwarming to hear that you've since been remarried. Without going too deep, and forgive me for being presumptuous to ask you to talk about this, how did that shape you into the coach that you're going to be to these young men who play for the Suns?
Yeah, I can appreciate your question. It's a part of my life, but I'm not going to let it define me. You know, what me and my children have been through the past few years is to say it's tough or has been tough doesn't even describe it. And yet the good Lord has gotten us through a lot, and we still have years to go. We may never be at a point where we feel okay with it, but those lessons that I learned, I'm hopeful that I can transfer and impart some of those lessons and things that I've learned from that to help our guys. I've learned to allow people to help me because I just needed a lot of help. When you're a doofus like me trying to raise five kids, you need help. And so I was put in a position where I had to rely on other people. You can imagine me going to a doctor's appointment with my kids, trying to figure out where do I sign my name on an application or all those sheets of paper they give you at the doctor's office.
Yeah.
Going to an emergency room at 2 o'clock in the morning because my boy has an infection and can't breathe. That was way over my head. So I just had to rely on a lot of people to help me, and a ton of prayer, and trying not to be perfect all the time. You know, I used to try to grade myself at the end of the day, like, you know, today I got an A or a B or a C, and I was always getting a D in my estimation. And then I just went to pass fail. You know, if they were in bed, they ate, homework was done, didn't smell too bad, I was like, pass. So it was one of those deals, man, where I was like, Mont, you need help. And the first time that God in the Bible said that something wasn't good was when man was alone. And that really impacted me. And so I hope our guys realize how much we need each other, because I definitely need them.
Monty, that was refreshing. Thanks so much for joining us for a few minutes. Really appreciate it. And congratulations again on the job.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you. Monty Williams, the new head coach of the Phoenix Suns, our guest. Yeah, he joined us earlier in the show. If you want to listen to that again, if you want to share it, it'll be up shortly on the Arizona Sports app and ArizonaSports.com. Yeah, really enjoyed that interview, that discussion we had with Monty Williams.
It's great.
It is Ticket Window Tuesday, presented by Arizona Central Credit Union. You'll have a chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Dave Matthews Band at Ok Chin Pavilion on September 13th. Your last chance to win coming up at 4:15 with Burns and Gambo. Coming up, with the hiring of Monty Williams, it puts the sports town of Phoenix in a very, very small category. I'll tell you what that is next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Murata, Song of the Day. Brought to you by Vital 4 Men. Sometimes you want to hit rewind. Now you can with Vital 4 Men. Find out more at vital4men.com.
People talking, and they're saying that you're leaving.
Remember this tune, Bick?
I do.
This reminds me of the movie Vision Quest. Loudon Swain going for his morning run.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, the reason why we're playing Change by John Waite is a topic we had earlier today, a discussion we had after speaking with Monty Williams. This feels like the first step toward change, but in a bigger sense, do you believe that people can change? What Monty Williams said about Robert Sarver in their meeting was pretty eye-opening, I thought. And now Suns fans have to make a decision. Are you going to be optimistic because you think Robert Sarver has changed his ways, or are you just dismissing it out of hand?
No, I'm certainly not. I am not dismissing it out of hand. I know Robert Sarver is a very smart man. I know that he is very charismatic. I know that the people who are close to him like him very much.
Yeah.
Okay. I just think he's not been able to control his worst impulses, and I think that's probably applies to all of us.
Yeah.
We all struggle with our worst impulses, right? Hey, where's my beer? Never mind. So we all struggle with that.
You only got 12 more minutes, Bick.
We all struggle with that. But I do believe it's possible, because the idea that Monty Williams could feel how bad he wants to bring a winner here, it's just whether Robert Sarver can stay in his shoes.
Yeah.
That's really just it.
Yeah.
And the question becomes, the bigger question, somebody brought this up, I forgot who it was, it's a brilliant point, If you thought the meddling got bad during the bad times, what happens if they ever get really good again?
Did we ever talk about Robert Sarver meddling on those Steve Nash teams?
Well, I don't think it was an issue then, but being around quite frequently,
yeah,
yes, that
really,
did happen.
But if you're really good, nobody, it doesn't...
People don't seem to care.
It's not even called meddling.
The biggest criticism was that he had the big, you know, foam finger in the first row.
Yeah, that was it. You're exactly right, Jarrett. I'm definitely adding that song to my Apple Music.
Are you really?
Yeah, I love that song.
I'm okay with it. Don't love it.
Did you ever see Vision Quest? It'll change your life, man.
Oh, come on.
It's a good movie. It's the best movie ever made about high school wrestling, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Monty Williams hired today. So when you take the totality of the four major league sports and their coaches, Phoenix is in a very small group in that Monty Williams, Rick Tocchet, Torrey Lovello, and a little bit of Cliff Kingsbury, they all reached the major leagues as players before they became head coaches. They are only, of the cities that have all four major sports, there's only two other...
Is that right?
One and a half, really, other cities that can make that claim.
Is that right? Wow.
Dallas, Rick Carlisle, Jim Montgomery, the head coach of the Stars.
Jason Garrett.
Chris Woodward and Jason Garrett. And Washington somewhat applies. Scott Brooks, Todd Reardon, the head coach of the Caps, Dave Martinez, and Jay Gruden, who never threw a pass in the NFL but was on practice squads, including the Cardinals practice squad for a while.
Kind of qualifies.
Yeah,
I put
an asterisk by it. You're going to count, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury, as he does have a page on ProFootballReference.com as an NFL quarterback, so I thought that was kind of interesting.
He does?
Yes.
He completed one pass. One for two.
It's a stat.
You're right.
Yeah, once you get an at-bat, you're in the baseball encyclopedia,
forever.
Man.
I know.
Those
it's
are Josh,
cool,
Rosen,
right?
Josh Rosen's stats last year, so what do you...
Oh! Yeah, Jarrett piling on now. And we are here at the Dignity Health Arizona Cardinals Training Center, and on TV, one of the TVs in the studio here, they have NFL Network on, and they're replaying the 2009 wild card game, Cardinals and Packers. For my money, still the greatest game the Arizona Cardinals have ever played.
Might be the best quarterback game in NFL history.
It's the best one I've ever watched. Aaron Rodgers was ridiculous, and Kurt Warner was better than ridiculous.
As you watch this game, and I've been watching the highlights, the thing that you forget about it was there was a time when this was a laugher, when the Cardinals were just blowing them out.
31-10 in the third quarter.
It was 24-7, and Green Bay fumbled the kickoff, and they recovered. That could have been a death knell. It was 31-10. After a Fitzgerald touchdown, and that's when Aaron Rodgers just got stupid hot. But Kurt Warner was even better. Yeah, that was what an amazing
Kurt
game.
Kurt Warner
that
in that game had more touchdown passes than incompletions. Five touchdowns, four incomplete passes.
You don't see that very often.
No, best game I've ever seen. And the other Cardinals Packers playoff game that ended with the two plays with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald, that was right up there, too.
It's a good thing I'm not Kurt Warner, because I would probably sit in my house, watch that game every day of my life. Man, I was good.
Are you suggesting Kurt does that?
No, I'm saying I would if I was him. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but he had a lot of those games.
I know.
How'd you narrow it down to just one?
That's a good point.
I wanted to get into this. Jared, I didn't warn you about this, but the sound is on one of the pages. Ben Roethlisberger did a sit-down interview with KDKA Television in Pittsburgh, where basically, after all of this strife, the relationship between he and Antonio Brown, how it dissolved, Brown weaseled his way out of town, got the trade, Ben Roethlisberger came out and said, yeah, the comments I made publicly about AB, that might have been too much.
You know, it's a fine line to walk sometimes of giving information out, giving kind of some cool things for the fans to be a part of, and maybe saying too much. And I know that I took some heat, and deservedly so, for some of the comments that I've made on that show, and especially towards him. And I genuinely feel bad about that, and I'm sorry. Did I go too far after that Denver game? Probably.
Yeah, the Denver game was an interception that was thrown by Roethlisberger. He criticized the route that Brown ran, and they've been replaying the highlight on a loop today on all the sports channels. It was not a good throw. It was intercepted by a defensive lineman. Roethlisberger now comes out and says, yeah, I'll probably still do the radio show, which got him into trouble in the first place.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, that's where it's a fine line. And we've given our opinions on the Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger. I know you're not a fan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really a fan either. I don't like the way Antonio Brown handled the situation. But when you get a player who does these weekly things, you're like, man, it's so boring. They never say anything. And here Ben Roethlisberger actually opens up and tells you how he feels. And it leads to the whole team blowing up. You can't have it both ways.
No, I know. I know. It just, Ben isn't, he just isn't the most sincere, honest person at times. So I don't know the sincerity of it. As for the idea of speaking and saying too much to the media, that certainly has never been the case between Ben Roethlisberger and me.
Antonio Brown tweeted out with no description last night. Two-face. That's all it said.
I saw that.
Two-face.
I saw that, and it kind of ties into what I just said. It's a fascinating era, man. This whole 20, 30 years from now, the Steelers are going to look back on this and go, wow, that was weird.
Yeah.
Seriously. So, there you go. Anyways, good stuff today, Vinny.
I got one more thing to leave
you
with.
Okay, good.
The Trailblazers are all bent out of shape after what the Oregonian posted on Twitter. They had a tweet that said, Splash Brothers, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum look like the Trash Brothers against Warriors. In quotes, best game three memes, jokes, national reaction.
That was Skip Bayless's tweet.
Yes.
They turned it into a headline, and the owner of the Trailblazers has vowed to never spend another nickel with the Oregonian.
Yeah. I think he investigated a little bit, or he reacted before investigating a little bit too fast.
Maybe.
It's in quotes. It wasn't their words.
I know.
They're passing
it
along. Everybody's so sensitive. Thanks to Amati Williams for joining us.
Wells,
DJ Humphries, Jordan Hicks. We're just going to name a bunch of
Cardinals.
We're out. Birds and Gamma up next.